But we'll start with a prayer. God, we thank you for today. I thank you for the people in this room. I thank you for the conversations that we'll have together. We say, praise God, praise you for what we got to watch through our students this morning and their joy and their energy and their hard work. Lord, we know how much time they don't have and how much time they put into what happens for this one Sunday, and we just give you praise for that. And it's through your Son we pray. Amen. We are starting a couple weeks worth of some conversations. If you've been in this class, you know we're kind of trying to hit some of the themes that come up with empty nesting and how we're approaching life. I act like I'm a part of this. I'm facilitating the discussions because I'm very obviously very far away from this season of life. But we're going to spend a couple weeks on marriage. So I want to acknowledge the elephant in the room, maybe, that not everybody in this room is may be in a marriage right now. And things happen as we age and as we develop and life stages change. So I want to acknowledge that from the front end, that the conversation in the next couple weeks might be really helpful to some people, and some people it might be painful or might be like, I wish I was not in this room. And so I just want to acknowledge that and say, I'm sorry if it hits anybody in a difficult way. But I think any perspective shared in any conversation that can be had can be really valuable for all of us to recognize this. I was kind of looking around for some information or conversation starters as I was kind of thinking about this topic. We're going to spend at least this weekend, next week, on this topic. Quick commercial. I won't be here, I'll be here next week. I'm just preaching next week. So I'll be at West End during class. So Jeannie is going to help lead the discussion, but Dave Morgan and Chris Gonzalez will both be in here next week to share, who are both licensed marriage and family therapists, sort of big picture view. Not today, I think, might be more practical and more thinking through how we can be better at this. Next week, they're going to think sort of big picture stuff, stages of development, life stages of the family, life stages in general, from a counselor standpoint, to kind of offer up some big picture advice on what they see dealing with families and in all stages of development. So Chris and Dave are going to be walking through that conversation next week. I'm kind of bummed I won't be here for that. We can record that. That will be a treat next week if you're not traveling for spring break or anything like that. Which some of you may not be. If you don't have kids at home, you may not be leaving town for spring break. I found a term this week that I had never seen before. I'd never heard of before. And maybe you've heard of this before, called gray divorce. Which is what some people refer to what happens maybe in the life of an empty nester, a 50-plus, 55-plus family. When a divorce happens later in life. This was from a family law practice website where I was just trying to figure out, okay, how are people defining this term? Gray divorce was coined by the AARP to define divorce involving individuals 50 years or older. U.S. Census Department released a 2021 report showing 35% of yearly divorces involved couples ages 55 years or older, which I found to be pretty fascinating. And another study I found from Bowling Green State University, they started studying in 2004. This was a study put out in 2012. Their study found that the divorce rate for U.S. population over 50 doubled in the previous two decades, and more than doubled for those over 65. Since half of the married population is 50 and over, these researchers projected that the U.S. population, that as the U.S. population ages by 2030, the number of persons age 50 and older who divorce will grow by one third. And then I found some other information saying, this is not just a U.S. issue, that other countries are facing very similar things. Canada's National Statistics Agency recognizes that gray divorce has been consistently growing among those 55 and older, including 65 and older. Rates are increasing in the UK. in the UK, it says 2018, the divorce rate among those 55 or older, which they dubbed silver splitters or silver surfers. Which all of this alludes to haircut. I don't know. But they said in the past 2 decades in Japan, couples married 30 years or more had seen their divorce rate quadruple. And quadruple, I don't know what it started at. If there was one, it could have gone from 1 to 4. Yeah, that's I don't know exactly how to quantify that. Other than that, it appears to be on a trajectory where it is growing. The Japanese refer to it as retired husband syndrome, is what they refer to this gray divorce, which I thought. Communicates a lot with how their culture. Yeah, yeah.
Man, thank you for this.
Segue. But all of that is simply to say, there does appear to be sort of an issue, and I think many of you probably have friends and family members and different people in this issue or in this life stage who are dealing with divorce or dealing with complications in their marriage at a later age. And we've talked through the difficulty of spending so many years so focused on children and child rearing, and then you get to a new season of life and you think, do I know this person who I'm with, and how do I connect or reconnect with somebody who maybe most of the last 18 or 20 years we have just been functionally together trying to get this thing done that we call parenting. So I think it's a worthwhile thing for us to consider and to think about and process together in some helpful ways. I guess that's all that I had on those slides. So I want us to address it. The questions we're going to discuss and go through today are not, I hope, are more encouraging and exciting. But how can we be better at this and be conscientious of this? We have 2 couples, although we only have half of one of them. Kelly,
Harlan. It's not a great divorce.
I know. Kelly, who I Bill would say would be the most helpful person to sit up here. I mean, Kelly's just awesome. We think a lot of Kelly. Has had strep and has been sick, and so she's not here today. So Bill will offer on behalf of the Harlans. And then we have the Harwells that we're super excited to share from. So I'm going to go ahead and let them come up, and I'm going to ask them a couple questions to get them to introduce themselves.
I'll take this chair.
I figured. And I'll move this where it's kind of the recorder's here, so hopefully we can pick up on the conversation.
We're stuck with Lori when you need them, right?
They don't.
Give us the real quick, and we'll do the commercial. We'll work I know y'all brought some resources. We'll work that into it at some point.
We've read the book.
Give us the quick. Bill, introduce yourself, and Kelly, tell us where you are in your empty nest journey.
I'm Bill Harlan. My wife Kelly is not here again. She's not well today and had strep. She's going to try to sneak in and hear the last part of the second service today, but she couldn't be up here without coughing all the time. We've been married 25 years as of June of this past year, and so we have 2 boys, Tucker and Luke. Tucker is a senior, which is hard to believe, at UT Knoxville, graduating in May. Luke is a sophomore at UT Chattanooga. Both have loved their schools, and so we're about a year and a half, I guess technically, into the empty nest journey, so not super long.
I remember when I was talking to the Harlans in the hallway one Wednesday night, and I was like, hey, I'm about to do this class coming up, and I would love for y'all to be a part of it at some point, about empty nesting. And I remember their reaction was, we are loving this. we have really enjoyed this season of life and where they are right now. And I was like, that's what I want to hear. Like, I want to hear people talking about, here's how to make this awesome and to make the most of this season. But that was my first reaction from them, was just like, this has been great. So that's one reason I wanted them to be here today to share that. Harwells, introduce yourselves.
Joey and Barry Harwell.
We went to West End a long time ago when Bill was in the youth group. and we have been empty nesters so long that they even have youth groups up there.
Oh, yeah,
so
that's right.
Sad,
yeah,
Craig and Meredith never got to do that. But anyway, we have been married 38 years, and we have twins, boy-girl twins, that are 32. And they both live here, and they both have given us grandchildren. So we have three. Craig has a boy and a little girl that's 3 weeks, a month old. And then Meredith is, and Williams is 7 months. She's 7 months. So we're grandparents. We've been empty nesters for a long time.
That's awesome. We'll start with, do you?
She's our spokesperson.
We'll start with a softball, just kind of easy to get going. What, when kids were out of the picture, or out of the home to a degree, you know, college at a minimum, or not living under the roof 12 months a year, what were some of the hardest adjustments to that for you guys? What were some of the easiest adjustments for you guys?
I'll take a stab if that's all right. So,
And crowd be thinking as well, because we'll throw this to you guys to get some more feedback.
So with the caveat that with twins, and that's those are our only children, you're either all in or you're done, right? And so Barry was the consummate room mother, PTO, I mean, she was involved in everything. And so part of the way through their senior year, I started getting worried about what her life was going to be like when her job got eliminated. And so I made all these plans for travel and fun things to do in the fall of 2011. So Craig was at Lipscomb, Meredith was down in Cleveland, Tennessee at Lee, and she was fine, but I was a mess. I cried all the time. And not just when I was not with, I mean, literally it didn't take, I mean, a commercial would get me going. And so it was hard. And I didn't see it coming because I was, you know, I was not at everything that she was at, but we got through it, you know. That was
Bill. What are your thoughts?
Kelly and I were talking about this last night. We talked like the hardest thing was the silence when they're both gone, and the best thing was the silence. So, you kind of had this little freedom of not worrying about what somebody's mood was, you know, laying on the couch over there, watching TV, or just things like that. But we also missed just the activity and just the time together. You know, there's just certain rhythms that we have together when they come home or when they're with us, and you know, whether it's Kelly and Luke doing a puzzle or cooking in the kitchen, or we're all listening to music, watching games together. You know, we just kind of missed that feeling, and that was gone. And so we kind of had to get used to that silence a little bit.
I was going to say, missing Luke cooking.
Cooking is pretty incredible. Yeah, he's a really good cook. I will say the other thing, the best part about it for us, and some of a relief, was all of a sudden we got spontaneity back. And that was pretty cool.
I'd love to hear from anybody in the crowd. What was for some who've entered that season, what was a really hard adjustment? What's been an easy adjustment?
We're similar to y'all. We've been married 40 years, and we have a 32-year-old and a 27-year-old. And a 32-year-old just has two grandchildren, one only about 7 years old. So, and we watch their children 3 days a week, so we're really back into it. We spent a long time out of it. Now we're back into it, and it's interesting, but the hardest part for me, I don't know about him, is when they leave, you don't know what's going on. Like, I was a mom that was like, I always knew what was going on, and one of our children has some issues, and he's now on his own, and it's like, now I don't know what he's doing, and it causes a lot of anxiety with it. So I think, like you said, the silence is great, but it's also hard because you're wondering, what's he doing right now? Like, and you don't have that perceived control.
How often do y'all think about your parents and how little information they had
yes.
about
yes, what they you were better
doing
off.
And where you were.
Or a parent.
I just think,
Well, we also talk about when they don't consult us on something, and we're like, oh, they didn't ask us about that.
Yes.
And then we look back and go,
we didn't ask. We grew up a lot faster.
We were 1,000 miles away from both of our parents, yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe more than that probably, and it was maybe once a week on a Sunday, 15-minute drive off.
Yeah, Kelly would be mad if I didn't tell the story. Yeah. Someone tell the story behind Kelly. So when we drop Luke off, she and Luke have just this incredible bond. It's one of the most beautiful mother-son relationship things you've ever seen, just because they do so many things together. They have a passion for theater. They cook together. They do puzzles together. It's just they have their things. And Luke and I have our things too. We do music, we do a lot of music stuff and barbecue and stuff. I mean, we just do fun little things like that. So we each of us have our own things that we do with Luke and with Tucker for that matter. But when we dropped Luke off, she was just, I mean, it was horrible. I mean, just crying all the way back from Chattanooga. And, you know, she started scrolling through and we were talking about this band that I really like called Lake Street Dive. And she's like, you know, we really want to go, you know, I'd love to see them. I've never seen them in concert. I really like them. And she's like, we know they're playing in New York, and or they're playing sometime. They're in New York in September, so let's go. Let's go.
Yep.
So she's like, are you serious? I said, let's go. Book it. And so, like, right then and there on the way home, she was on a flight to New York City in September, and it was one of the best weekends we had ever had. It was just such a fun time, walking across the Brooklyn Bridge, going to Radio City Music Hall. It was just one of those moments. It was just unbelievable. It was great.
Expound on that. Like, how in the new season of life how hard was it to relearn intentionality or find, be intentional about, now we're going to do things together? Like, what did that look like?
It wasn't hard, because you're like, you're like, oh, we have time to do all that now, you know, because you go from basketball, cross country, plays, being somewhere constantly, new group stuff, to, oh, we've got all this time, and, you know, you miss each other during all that, you know. And so it's wonderful to be able to travel. We both separately have been to Banff this year.
Oh yeah,
the Harlan's and so you know you can be spontaneous on a Friday night.
That was not spontaneous for us. That was 25th anniversary.
Yeah, you can be spontaneous on a Friday night, or you don't have to do anything.
That's right.
Because
that's
you don't have to be anywhere.
Yes.
So for us it was kind of easy. But I will tell a story on myself, just to when they were little. It was like so much easier for me just to handle what was going on with them. And so one time he was talking to me and we're talking, and we've told this in young parenting classes, so this is for you and Susan. Craig came up and wanted to talk to me, and I, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, I can just take care of this and then go right back to Joey. Well, I just turned, completely shut him off, you know, because I thought I can handle this and then he'll go on. I turned back around. He's not there. And so I think you've got to start it early, and you've got to establish that you are both important, and it's not always about the kids, and it's not always, everything can't always be about them, because you were together before the kids came. And you, and really, Kim said this to me the other day, Kirby, she said, you think about it, you have about 20 years with them, and hopefully you have 60 plus years with each other, you know. And so you really have to think that way, because once they, you think, oh, I've been so much a part of their life, and we talk all the time, and you know, well, they grow up and they have lives, and they go off to college, and they do things and have decisions, and that's what you're supposed to do. That's what's supposed to happen, you know. And so when they're gone, and when they're, I don't know, you want them to grow up and be adults and be able to make decisions on their own. And so you give them those tools, and then you have to step back sometimes.
This wasn't a question on the sheet, but so I'm sorry to throw this curveball. But as you were talking, I just got to thinking, I'm curious, and maybe somebody else wants to jump in as well, but how was your spouse different? What were the changes as far as who they were as a human, who they were as a spiritual person, as a father, as a mother? Can you speak to specific, here's how you were different I realized you were different at, when our kids left the house than when we first got married. You know, what were some of those that maybe you had to readjust to, oh yeah, this is a different person than we were 20 years ago? Or what were, is there anything, you can you put any thoughts to that? That was a really weird question, maybe, or hard to, struggling to articulate it. I'm just saying, what are those changes? What's different?
I've got a good curveball.
I'd say for us, it's hard a little bit, let's see if I can articulate this. It's a little bit hard for me to tell you before and after. I can just tell you how we've had to change through some hard life circumstances that we've experienced in this season. Because it's not all been trips to New York City.
Yeah.
Spontaneity all the time. I mean, for us, Kelly's always been the kind of this art glue. I mean, she's just, you know, she has been an incredible mother to our kids and just always mindful of them, even when my mind is off career stuff or off other spots. Like, she's just always making sure everything is good all the time. And if I'm out of line or if I'm out, she's like, hey, I think you better help. Let's check on this together. So I've always appreciated that about our partnership, because I can get hyper-focused and on something else and not pay attention to what I need to be paying attention to. And so I think there's some things in our marriage like that that we've always kind of had these roles together. Being a firstborn child and firstborn grandchild, I've always kind of been the one who had to take care of my elderly relatives.
Yep.
So in this season of life, when her parents got really sick, and then her dad eventually passed, that's been my role, to step up into that and to help take care of a lot of things when it's been really, really hard for her. Meanwhile, she's never forgotten to say, all right, let's check on the boys here and just let's make sure things are good. So I love our team, right? I love our marriage in that respect, that we can have our roles like that and we can depend on each other in some things. But there are some times right now, just as we have to walk through grief, and we walk through just different things that I think that our communication has been harder at times.
Okay.
In that we've been more honest with each other. And so we've had to prepare ourselves, you know, when we are, what we're feeling and what we're going through, because it's been so hard just to deal with, you know, just watching her parents age. And I mean, just to give you some context, this is the first time, I think, in 3 or 4 years that we haven't gone to Knoxville 4 or 5 times for emergencies to deal with either my father-in-law or my mother-in-law. And so even when the boys were in high school, it started with COVID. And it just continued that way. And so we've always kind of, like, what's the next landmine about to happen with them? And so I really feel like that we have had to be honest, communicating. Like, if we're hurting, we have to tell each other that. We cannot stuff it. And so sometimes it's hard to hear. And sometimes when you're also struggling and your spouse is struggling, you're like, man, this is tough. So, but I appreciate that about her. We've grown in that way. But we've had to be really, really, really honest at times.
So I think I hear you saying, is that good, Mike? Okay. I think I hear you saying, when there may be a season of life when children are at home where connecting deeply or being as honest as we need to be is just harder to find the time and space to do that. And then you reach a season of life where it's like, okay, we've got nothing else to do but have these hard conversations, and we can't not address this, and we can't not talk about,
because we realize what is happening.
It would
eat us up.
Yeah.
As a couple, if we just smoldered.
Yeah.
And we didn't deal with it. And so I think we've had to learn how to do that.
I need
that. Yeah, that's right. We need to work it.
Susan is.
Mike's going to hang around after class for a while.
Susan will say, what's wrong? And I'll just say, I'm just tired. She'll be like, tired is not an emotion. I mean, tell me an emotion. Like, what are you feeling? Like, you can't just say you're tired. Like, tell me what you are thinking or feeling. And I tend to say, I'm an Enneagram 9 who has never met an emotion I can't stuff. I'll be fine. I'm going to power through. And so I can see.
Until you don't.
And so I love that. Thought similar experiences for anybody of now you have time and space to have hard conversations that maybe you didn't have time and space to have. Harwell's thoughts.
Well,
I was going to address your other question
yeah.
first.
Okay. Yes, please.
So I want to give a shout out to her because, you know, in 38 years of marriage, she hasn't changed, but the stuff that she's focused on has changed. Because when she was, you know, when first got married, she was in the senior care business and she wound up running a nursing home, so she was all in on that. And then she decided when the children were born to be a stay-at-home mom. Actually, we decided long before that to be a stay-at-home mom. But she was totally focused on the kids. And then there was a period between when they went to college and 3 years ago when she was totally focused on, you've always been all in at Youth Encouragement Services and the women's ministry here. And then the period that I was a shepherd, she was more of a shepherd than I was. And then now, with grandkids and her aging mom, you know, that's her focus. But I will say this, during all that period of time, I never felt like I was in second place. I just knew that, I mean, I'm, you know, a little more independent than any of those other entities that were happening. But, so, I probably changed a lot, not necessarily for the better, but anyway. So, no, what? The other.
Do you have any thoughts on that? Like on what changed the most?
When you were talking about it, I was thinking, yeah, I'm always just whatever's happening at the moment. That's why when they went to college, I thought, well, it's time. So now I've got to focus on something else.
Yeah.
But
a two on the Enneagram.
I've tried to adapt, but we have just to me, we just changed back to before we had the kids. And the focus is on each other, but we also have had the same thing. My dad had Alzheimer's. My mom is really terrible. She's 90. His mom passed. Now his dad passed when we had only been married a year and a half, and so that was a huge challenge when you know before we even had kids. But so he's always tried to be the
kind of became the. I'm the youngest of three, with two older sisters. So the. On the positive side of that, I grew up with three mothers. On the negative side of that, I kind of got thrust into this family leader role when I was 28 years old. So, but I mean, we're blessed that we've always tried to make time for each other, you know, whether traveling or we've tried several different things of recreational companionship. But the good news is, we still like each other, and so I'd rather spend time with her than anybody.
How's communication changed? You spoke a little bit about the forcing to be a little more honest, but how's communication maybe changed in this season of life?
Ours is because, you know, I did know so much, like you were saying, about the kids, and you know, you're all in with the kids, and you think you have sort of control over them, you know, until they graduate. And then just to lose that, really hard. And he's much calmer about it and much better. And he can just calm me down. And he didn't ever have to do that through the years, you know. And he's just wiser than I am and calmer and can just talk me off the ledge, you know. So that communication. And that's hard, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to, like, accept that and, you know, and all that, but it was, we've just had to talk through, you know, decisions that they've made and in all aspects, you know.
And remind ourselves, we never ask our parents for any advice about anything. Seriously, I mean, yeah. So why should they?
I'd be curious, yeah, communication.
I think a common theme is change management, right?
Yeah.
So, oh my gosh, we were married and having a great couple of years, and then we have kids. Oh my gosh, what did we do? I mean, talk about change, right? And then you go through all of that. You lose a job, and you go through a transition, you got change, right? It's all about dealing with that. So this is one more thing. Now, this is usually a good change. Once your spouse stops crying from going home from college, right, then it's all good often. However, the next step is, and we just saw this 2 years ago, is when you both quit your jobs and retire, right? Because you don't need to work anymore. Now you're really in each other's space a lot.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing as when the kids left, right? So it's the same thing. You got to have the same skills to deal with all of that change. Be open to it. Don't fight it. Adjust. Don't spend all your time together. But you know, it's I think it's that thing.
It's a couple of things on communication. There's just some things that I've been blessed with in our marriage, and I'll never forget. Tim L. McIntyre, he was our, you know, he did our wedding, and he did our marriage counseling. And I always say this at, you know, rehearsal dinners when we do blessings and things. But his gift, his thing was the greatest thing in marriage is companionship. The ability to pick up the phone or sit at the table and talk to your spouse or talk to your significant other about your day is incredible. And I think I've never really forgotten that. So I feel like that's always kind of been the basis. Like, we just enjoy companionship. We enjoy common interests of being outdoors, you know, watching college football, going out to eat. We just enjoy a lot of things in common that we love to do. And that started way beyond the internet space. So there's some things that have never changed. I think we just recognize in each other what somebody might need, like, let's go do this or let's do that, to just try to, just to help each other out, you know, just to kind of balance with like each other. I mean, things that we're doing now, just recreationally, I mean, we love to go out to eat, we love to travel, and it could be just down the road or it could be some far off place. We're kind of pickleball people now. We're enjoying this now. So, you know, so we're trying. We're trying some different things. But I think in terms of communication, I think too, I think we have learned to tap out if we need to. So we can tap the other person and say, can you take this? And then we can do it kind of vice versa. Just when life is tough, we can kind of enter in and out of spaces sometimes like that for a joke.
Communication thoughts. I'd love to hear, like, what has worked well for you, or what was hard about communication in this new season, or maybe what are you fearing about that if you're approaching that season? Any thoughts from anybody?
No phones at the dinner table.
No phones at the dinner table?
Yeah, so practical things like that, because that's when we probably have more. Probably the bulk of our conversation for the day could be, I don't know, I can track it, but I bet it is that when we sit down to do it.
Even if it's just a chicken.
That's great.
And at restaurants, no phones. Because I see couples, and we've done it before, but couples that are just on their phones, and they're across from each other, and they're texting, I don't know what they're doing. We were also,
they're not talking to each other.
We were also married 9 years before we had children.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big thing too, because you get to know each other as friends, as people, before the kids come.
Before the responsibilities.
I would have liked it before that, but he didn't. So that was a good thing. I mean, good and bad.
Any other thoughts? Communication thoughts?
Can I just say this real quick? I was just thinking that all of these things that we're going to talk about, and we have a little team to talk about. But all of it, if we go into that, if we have that perspective, I don't know if both of y'all have that, is we want to stay together. Like, we're committed to this, and I think all of the problems you encounter become much easier to deal with when you've got that overall perspective of life. We're going to deal with it. We're going to figure it out. We're going to stay through it. I just think everything we're going to talk about.
Mike could probably speak to this maybe from a counseling perspective, but my gut would tell me the gray divorce rate is not the result of a failure in marriage after 30 years of marriage, but is the result of a failure in marriage after 10 years of marriage or after 5 years of marriage. And for practical reasons, getting a divorce when their kids at home, it's just a harder season of life. I mean, we've talked about that in other classes, talk about that in our connection with church as well, about how we tend to power through whatever is going on in our heart because we think there's some bigger purpose for serving, and we continue to chisel away at what we're dealing with. Jean?
We would hope to have an advantage over anybody in the world because we're filled with the Spirit, and because our focus is, my number one ministry is to Mike. So I'm looking for ways to encourage him and point him toward Jesus. So sometimes I have to say, okay, Spirit, I need a little extra love for these patients' kindness here. And we too have gone through both being retired and you're in each other's space, and it's a whole new transition where you're like, ooh, you need a man cave.
Yeah.
you need some distance. But I think the rhythm of looking for ways to adore each other and believing to resurrection power, it's not just meant for these huge monumental things, but that daily walking out and being around people who encourage your marriage in that direction. I know as women, you can get off with a bunch of women and they start complaining, or they, that is not the environment that's best for your marriage. So yeah, seek like-minded people who will encourage you. If you're in a tough spot, you know, how to work it out, who to go talk to, and, you know, that's what our community is intended to be.
And serve together, you know. Yeah. We grew spiritually when he was an elder. He was an elder for 10 years, and that helped. We grew spiritually. And then serving on the YBS board together. When you're serving together, they always say your focus is outward. And, you know, you can't always do that when one of you has to be at a basketball game, the other one might be serving, the other one, you know. So this gives you that opportunity to serve together, and then you see these beautiful parts of each other that you can, you know,
honor. I love that.
To your point about the gray divorce, we've unfortunately had at least two sets of friends that have done that. Yeah. And, you know, I think what happens in general is they kept the marriage together for the sake of the kids. And then when the youngest child leaves home, they discover they don't have anything in common, or even worse, they don't like each other. And so I think the watchword is, along the way, to never forget that you were a couple first, because you're going to be a couple again on the back end, you know. And so we've tried over the years to get away occasionally, and even if it's, you know, like Bill said, even if it's going to Radnor Lake on Saturday morning, right, or it might be going, you know, something a little bigger splash than that, but it's... Empty nest is great, but we've seen it. It's also fraught with peril.
I was just thinking one other thing too, that we've talked a lot about how we are as couples, but I think Jimmy, you hit on something I think is important. I feel like we are in the process of learning how to honor each other's space to be individuals too. There's some things that Kelly loves her Covenant Group girls, and she loves to have that time with them. And there are some times that she's reconnected with some friends and wants time and space to be with them and do different things. And then on the flip side, she's allowed me give me that space to find. I mean, I kind of went through a little bit of a health wake up call a couple of years ago, or actually last year. And, Brian Berry is one of my really good friends. I'm so thankful for him because, you know, he kind of got me back running again. I enjoy doing stuff with him, you know, running trails. I'm doing lots of outdoor stuff. And so we do a lot together, you know, with that. And that's been fun. And reconnecting and just building, I think, good male friendships too, and having the space to do that. Because I think one of the things I noticed in my family and just in general about males, we don't do a great job of that at all.
Yeah.
If it were not for our spouses, we'd be in trouble because they are so much better at connecting. And so I think maybe the pandemic, watching my family members who kind of isolated themselves later in age and just didn't have that many close friendships, I think that's just been a wake-up call for health for me. And so she's kind of giving me the space to do that. He's good with that.
Okay.
Brian? I'm just going to keep looking at each other as you're asking questions, just kind of shrugging. So I keep trying to fit how we think about things into the kinds of questions that are being asked.
We think real differently.
And that's kind of where I'm going with this, because in all of this, we sort of have a foxhole mentality, because we with our kids. We had one with really significant behavioral issues. I mean, he was, like, as a kindergartner, was literally the worst kindergartner in the metro school system that was not in state custody. And people tried to tell us that he wasn't, but he was literally the only one in the circumstance that he was in. And so, you know, there's always been a sort of us against them when it came to the kids.
Us against them, us well, against the world?
Or no, us against the kids.
You against the kids.
Because we're trying to survive, because you know, we're trying to survive the kid.
Yeah.
And then there's the us against the world, and when, you know, and I heard you talking about the people that, you know, the ones that are good for you and the ones that are bad for you, and we and there was so little understanding of what we were going through because we also saw the world, our relationship viewed the world very differently than the things that we saw in church, because we saw all of the stay-at-home moms and the single-income families, and she's the one that works in an office, and I'm the one that has stayed at home, and every guy in my direct line for generations has stayed at home. So we were always joking, you should go take the Beth Moore class, and you should go to Beth class. And so we, you know, there were a lot of people that we didn't identify with here. And so, you know, there's communication-wise, part of it with us is that we just don't trust anybody else. I mean, and that's a good thing and a bad thing, but there has always been that nobody else gets this but us. And she's sort of the battle-tested version of what I signed up for in the first place. Because, you know, it's like, I survived cancer. She revived a kid on the phone with 911. We had 3 miscarriages, which means we had 7 pregnancies, changed or lost jobs during every one of them. So it's like, nobody else understands that. It's just the, you know, it's like the two of us against everything else. And yeah, I mean, and I hear all of the making time for each other stuff, but if those kinds of stories don't tear you apart, you're bonded for life.
Yeah. That's what I mean, I hear you.
You're in a foxhole together, that's your best friend.
What I hear you saying is, yeah, at this point in life, there's nothing else that is going to drive a wedge in between what has been for
us. Yeah, because if something comes back, it's like, oh, been there, done that. Okay.
Yeah. It's like, you know, when the 4-year-old granddaughter gets mauled by a dog, you just sort of go into action and you know what to do. I mean, and so there are lots of worse things that could happen, but it's been, you know, there's been enough that we know we have the communication that, you know, the unspoken communication. Yeah. Even so, you know, I put to put a plug in for phones at tables. we have spent a lot of our marriage both working out of the house.
Yeah.
So we talk all the time throughout the day, and sometimes we go to the restaurant and the phone just is like, I can talk about that now because we're out of everything else.
Well, I will say that we're the people that you come to when you want to feel really good about your life.
I'm laughing because I know your heart in saying that. I hate that that's what you're saying.
But that's literally one of the roles that I play with the men that I know, is I'm the one, at least we're not that.
Yeah. But we're good with that. It's fine.
That's what we do. It's our ministry.
You're a team. And I think that's an obvious thing I've seen in you guys for many years. Is you two are a team.
Yeah.
And
yeah, between us, we're one really good person.
Yeah.
I want to say something about them. They are the most welcoming, wonderful people in this church. I have to say it because we were sort of new, and we were talking about small groups, and Brian said, why don't we be a small group, the 4 of us, until we can find more people. And we go, like, today we're going out to lunch with them, and they were so intentional and so welcoming, and we just love you guys so much. You've been made us feel so welcome.
Did they invite you to Thanksgiving? I mean,
everybody.
Yes.
That's the thing. Getting a Thanksgiving invitation from us.
They're wonderful, unique people. We love them very much.
I love that. It is almost time to go.
Not to be depressing, but you know, cancer, job loss, parent loss. You know, it's like this stage, you're going to be facing a lot of things that are very difficult. And you have these wonderful children that now you can take a deep breath and, you know, not worry about as much, and they help some of these situations.
Yes.
You know, my daughter is a school counselor, and she, you know, I'll tell her something, and she'll go, well, Mom, and, you know, so it's really, last night my son said, yes, I'm like, you need to take a breath, you know, and so it's good. You've got these cool relationships with them as adults to kind of help you through some of these really hard things that you may be facing later in life, just because of our age and the age of our parents. And
I'm hoping to spend a week or two, and I probably need to reach out to Mike or others to come in for this conversation, but talking about processing grief in this season of life, because undoubtedly you're going, this season of life, is grief is going to be involved in some way, whether that's grieving changes that are happening or grieving actual loss of humans in your life that matter to you, grieving, or whatever it is you're grieving. And just healthy ideas on how to process and do grief well in this season. And so I do anticipate us getting there at some point this semester. I know they had a couple quick commercial for a couple resources.
We're getting out of our lane here. This has already been talked about, but we heard about the parenting adult kids discussion, and we've actually, I've got some books here, and I'll just pass this around. But the one that resonated with me, this is the only one I've read, it's called Doing Life with Your Adult Children, and the subtitle is Keep Your Mouth Shut and the Welcome Mat Out. And that pretty well sums it up.
I vouch for that book. It's written by a guy named Jim Burns, he's on the Mount Rushmore of youth ministers, like worldwide. Like Jim Burns is one of the, if Greg knows the name, he is a very influential person in the world of youth ministry, who's probably in his 70s or something now. He's been around for a long time. But anything he puts out, I love.
And it's very helpful. And then this one I love, you know, she makes this one, praying the scriptures for your small children, high schoolers, and this one's for your adult children. And it gives scenarios, you know, when they are looking for a job, when they're going to college, and then you insert their name, and she already has got the scriptures for you. So it's a beautiful book too. So we've got all three of those up there if you want to look at them.
Can we say thank you to the Harlans and Harwell? And your last assignment is just make sure you meet a couple people on your way out and like shake hands and high five. I'm still enough middle school in me that I need you to acknowledge other humans in the room.